the time being. I'm sure you can understand why.
Indeed,
he muses, nodding slowly.
This Serim is quite a nasty piece of work. I see she's kept you on a very tight leash.
Choker collar, more like it, but sure. All the warmth falls from his face, his eyes glazing with a sheen of tears.
You're missing something, but you don't know what.
A bolt of chill shoots through my veins, boring all the way to my marrow.
Oh, my dear.
His face scrunches, hand clutching his chest as a tear slides down his cheek.
Something so special.
He sobs, his words a convulsing ache in my belly. A swift stab to the left side of my chest.
The answer is within you, in the place where you hide everything. I could help you drain that.
That's enough, I snap, thumping the candlestick on the counter. His eyes widen, breath shuddering. For a long moment, he just stares, all the color leaching from his face, more tears gathering in his eyes that fall freely down his cheeks. Drips of a truth I don't want to look at, don't want to see. Not when I can already imagine the sad sounds his tears are making just by looking at them. I said enough. Please. He blinks, crushing his brow together, not bothering to wipe the trails of sadness from his cheeks.
Of course. I'll do my best to stop.
He shakes his head, then stands, moving out from behind the counter.
I'll collect your decoy purchases so you can be on your way.
My knees almost buckle the moment he's out of sight, my hand coming up to rest on my hammering heart as he shuffles about his store, pulling things from the shelves. I don't watch, don't pay attention, just stare at the back wall and pretend I'm somewhere else where my mind's not being picked at. It was nice when he began plucking through my thoughts, leaving my words redundant, like a convenient tickle. Now it stabs. He returns with a black leather-bound book with a pearly moon plume embossed on the cover, a pot of ink, and a bundle of coal sticks. He also has a small metal sharpening tool that looks capable of withstanding the force of the stone I very much intend to use to punch the linchpin free of my shackle. He piles some gold coins into a pouch I suspect is my change, packs it all into a brown leather tote with a flap that buckles into place, then slides it across the counter.
Your measurements are in the ledger.
I believe so.
Then I'll send a lark once your purchases are prepared and ready to be collected.
Thank you. I take the bag, the leather supple beneath my grip. Such a beautiful, high-quality knapsack. It seems wasted on me.
It's not,
he says, garnishing me with his soft smile.
Rain is coming. I don't want your diary to soil. It's such a beautiful one. And I want you to be able to enjoy it.
Frowning, I look to the ceiling, to where a round window is spilling a bold beam of sunlight that ignites eddies of dust. It looks perfectly fine to me.
You'd be able to hear it coming if it weren't for the iron cuff, and if you bothered to listen.
His words pinch all my tender spots, my blood chilling as I realize how deep he's dug. It's easier not to, I bite out.
You listen to Claude.
I grind my teeth so hard I fear they might shatter, feeling like a skeleton picked of all its meat, just bones left to bleach in the sun. Claude's playful, wild and vicious, strong and feisty. She doesn't wallow or sulk or feel sorry for herself.
Rain is
tears. She's bloodshed. Rain's the frost that sticks to the skin of the dead who are tossed over the wall for the beasts of the shade to feast upon. Rain's the snow that coats the shaded half of this fucked up world. Rain's
power, my dear.
My next word sputters on my tongue.
Rain is power,
he continues.
Half a world coated in powdered power no one is strong enough to wield. Though you could, if you did not tuck sadness into that icy lake within you, along with...
Thank you, kind sir, for accepting my candlestick as currency. There's a stretch of silence before he dips his head so low it could almost be a bow.
It's been my greatest honor, Rave.
With the leather satchel clutched close to my chest, I spin, making for the door, feeling like a sour bogsberry was just squeezed all over my brain and rubbed between the folds, massaged real fucking deep. This day may have started off on a high, but it's swiftly losing its luster. Diary entry. Elowen Nevan. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. A female came to me this day with the same ember eyes as the male who visited last slumber. Just as remarkable to look at, with thick, curly hair and freckles on her nose and cheeks. She cradled a bowl of food she was brave enough to set down beside Slatra's coiled tail. I took one look at it and fell back to sleep, only to be woken sometime later by the beautiful, heavily scarred male scooping me into his arms. I thrashed and screamed, but Slatra did nothing. Nothing! Not even a growl! The male tucked me against his chest, his arms so strong I realized that fighting was useless. And tiring. I had so little energy left and not much left to fight for, anyway. He carried me up the tunnel of stairs and into the Imperial stronghold. He dumped me in a tub full of warm, bubbly water, fully clothed, then stormed from the room, leaving me alone with the female I suppose is his kin. She undressed me, and I lacked the care to stop her, but I did try to hide myself as she bared my breasts. She pushed my hands away and scrubbed me down, telling me that where she was brought up, bodies are not seen as something to be shy about, no matter their shape or size, that flesh is not treated as some great secret, and breasts are worshipped for the way they nourish the younglings of their clan. She introduced herself as Veya Vagor and apologized for her brother's behavior, talking to me as if I was conversing back. I wondered which brother she was speaking of. I don't believe I could ever accept an apology for what Tyroth Vagor had so willingly taken from me. My kingdom. My independence. She spoke of many things and asked many questions while I stared at the wall and wondered if this is how Hadion felt all those phases he was mute. Like there was so little point in it all. But then she stopped scrubbing my body, tucked my hair back off my face, told me she teaches combat at Drok Academy, and asked if I'd like some lessons. The words lit something in me, and I felt more alive than I have in a very long while, like an aurora had just risen in my chest. I told her yes, I want some fucking combat lessons. Her smile was blinding. Rave. Chapter 53. Pyrok watches on from the booth seat opposite me, reclined, hands clasped behind his head, an ever-present smirk on his face I certainly don't appreciate. I leave the thin metal sharpening tools standing atop the linchpin embedded in my cuff, willing it to stay. This is it, I murmur, attention honed as I move my hand slowly away.
You think?
Gut feeling. I grasp the rock I stole from the loft's bouldered shore and lift it above the rod, count to three, then slam it down. The rod skitters across the stone like a fucking arrow. Sighing, I thump the rock on the table, scrambling for the tool to the tune of Pyrok's deep belly laugh. The asshole. Glad somebody's finding this amusing. I reset the scene, trying to get the cuff perfectly level so the pin will stand on end. Still laughing, Pyrok wipes a tear from the corner of his eye.
37. Shut up.
Feeling the hairs on the back of my neck lift, I slash a stare around the space to see if anyone else is taking enjoyment from my erupting well of frustration. The cozy, domed building consists of 3 levels, the outer rim segmented into plush leather booths, one of which we're currently occupying, with a delightful view across the loft I wish I could fully appreciate. Cuff-free. A circular bar dominates the center of the room, surrounded by stools mostly occupied with chatting patrons snacking on meat skewers, sipping from tall glasses of foggy liquid, or guzzling mugs of molten mead. Upon my surveillance, I catch 2 folk looking my way, perusing my cuff, passing whispered words to each other. Waving with my shackled hand, I flash them an exaggerated grin that drops straight off my face the moment I set my attention back on the task at hand. Essie would have had this off in a heartbeat.
Thrun hit a nerve?
Pyrok asks, and I flick my lashes up to glare at him. He shrugs.
Your mood plummeted. Significantly.
Such a nice way to say I'm being a bitch. Several, I mutter, turning my attention back to leveling my cuff. Think I'll pay a busker to collect my package when it's ready so I don't have to face the mind weft again. Lately, folk are taking far too much interest in my life, past, present, and future. I'm sick of it. Collue this, offspring that. Let me peer into your mind and help excavate your past grievances. No fucking thank you.
I hear you and Veya got off on the wrong foot.
Pyrok muses, then nabs a honey-glazed nut from one of the 3 terracotta bowls of snacks he ordered with our first round of mead, tossing it in the air, catching it with his mouth. I hadn't eaten in a while, I say, setting the rod atop the pin, trying to release my hold without it toppling. She ate fruit in front of me.
Ah.
I pull my pinching hand away, slow, steady.
I think you'd like her if you got to know her.
I'll have to take your word for it, I respond, not bothering to mention that I don't intend to stay here long enough to find out. Nice city, happy folk, I admit I was wrong, but I've still got a hankering to punch my fist through Rex Zaros's chest and rip out his heart. The urge itching at my bones like a swarm of frost flies. I pick up the stone, raise the thing, then slam it down. The rod scatters across the table to the rhythm of my sharp-tongued curses while Pyrok chuckles himself into an impending grave. A little help? I growl, waving my cuffed hand at him while reaching for the rod. With a shake of his head, he picks up his drink and drains it to the dregs.
That thing is on there for a reason, I'm sure,
he says, wiping his lips with back of his sun-brushed arm. Might have something to do with the fact that I bit off the tip of Rex Zaros's finger, I mutter, frowning when the sky releases a heady rumble that seems to shake the air. I glance out the open window to my right, scouring the picturesque loft ruffled by the wind. Since this establishment sits amongst the bouldered shore on the eastern hook of Dom, we have a perfect view of the swooping city, of the western point that keeps drawing my eye, appearing desolate of civilization, completely clothed in rust-colored jungle. What's there? Silence. I look at Pyrok, who's now staring at me like I sprouted an extra head. What?
Nothing,
he says, releasing a full-body shiver likely attributed to the fingers story. I get it. I felt the same at first, but I've since bonded with the thought.
It's walled off.
He jerks his thumb toward the point.
A hushling lives there.
I frown.
Really? Wanna go investigate?
I cast another glance toward the point.
Sort of.
I want this cuff off more, I grind out, and Pyrok pushes to a stand.
Another drink for the long battle ahead?
Absolutely. I drain my glass, the mead a rich conglomeration of smoked chesberries, hobs, and burning wood. Not too sweet or bitter. Undoubtedly the most delicious drink I've ever tasted. I'll pay you back with the change I got for trading the stolen candlestick, I say, sliding the empty glass into his hand.
You sure you don't want a glass of water? It doesn't taste like dirt here, and your cheeks are pretty flush.
Mead, I murmur, turning my attention back to the cuff, lining up the rod. I doubt my purchased items will be ready before tomorrow's rise, meaning I'll probably be escorted back to the Imperial stronghold for the oncoming slumber. Please. The only way I'm sleeping beneath the same ceiling as His Imperial Highness without saying or doing something stupid is if I'm so utterly smashed I'm too comatose to lift my body off the pallet. I'm not usually one to drown my sorrows, but I see no point fighting the tide that obviously wants to dunk me beneath a pall of mindless oblivion. I'm just steadying the rod again when movement outside catches my eye, my seat allowing me the perfect view of the domed lookout perched atop the mountain far above, of the many massive hutch holes burrowed into the swooping cliff. Twice now, I've seen the same adolescent sabersythe leaping from a rocky plateau cut within the bulging stronghold, the beast's only adornment a leather saddle blanket, perhaps getting it used to the feel of something draped upon its back. Though interesting to watch it swoop through the sky in a giddy dance, frolicking about like it's burning with a belly full of energy it doesn't know what to do with, it's not what I've been looking for. Sabersythes aren't typically used for Carter crossings since they can't travel much farther south than the Fade for risk of freezing to death. They can't stand the snow any more than a moonplume can stand the sun, and I don't want to go toward the sun. I want to go away from it. Thankfully, most major cities have a reserve of charmed, generally placid molten maws trained enough to cart paying passengers to their chosen destination, escorted by the one who charmed the beast. And that molten maw right there, now bursting into view from behind the mountain range, skimming through the sky as the wind ruffles its pink and red plumage, a double saddle cushioned between its feathered wings. That's my ticket out of here. The massive beast lowers onto a plateau, throwing its head around to gnaw at an itch beneath its wing as Pyrok pulls the booth's curtains closed, then settles into the seat opposite me. Tell me, I murmur, pointing out the window with my rod. Is that the Carter hutch?
Thinking of going somewhere, Moonbeam.
My head whips around, heart plopping into my guts at the sight of Khan reclined in the booth, hair pulled back, loose bits hanging around his fiercely beautiful face. He's dressed in a black leather tunic that fits his frame like a second skin, stitched together with thick thread, the lines accentuating the broad scope of his powerful chest. What little sleeves the garment has are cut off across his wide shoulders, his scarred arms crossed as he watches me from beneath an arched brow. I suck a breath into suddenly parched lungs, filling them with his molten scent that makes my heart rally.
Hmm?
He coaxes, and I realize I've been sitting here staring at him, cheeks aflame, dry mouth empty of words, marinating in the stiff waves of tension undulating between us. Creators, it's like he stole my tongue. Where did Pyrok scurry off to? A big tipsy buffer between myself and this male would be really nice right now.
I've got all slumber,
Khan rumbles, and I swear his deep, raspy voice was designed by the creators themselves to disable me, to tamper with my insides, rearrange me into a mindless idiot.
The rest of my life, actually.
Fuck. I've seen some of your city, I managed to blurt. Not at all what I intended to say, but that thread of conversation was going in dangerous directions. His other brow bumps up.
And?
Not what I expected. The corner of his mouth curls into a half-smile that makes me want to squirm in my seat, picturing his face between my thighs, right here on this table for everyone to hear me scream.
Are you giving me a compliment, Prisoner 73?
Don't let it go to your head.
I most certainly will,
he says, and I roll my eyes, reaching for the fresh mug of mead Pyrock must have told him I'd asked for before feeding me to this proverbial saber-scythe, the untrustworthy asshole. I'm just wrapping my fingers around the mug when Khan's hand whips out, grips mine, flattens it against the table. In another swift motion, he has the sharpening tool poised against the linchpin, the rock in his other hand, and begins tapping it with shrill, tender hits that sweep a hush over the establishment. My brows rise, and I picture everyone looking toward our closed curtain booth as the pin slides free. Khan sets the tools down while I pull back my arm, cleave the iron free, then toss it through the window, watching it splash into the loft. I close my eyes and rub my wrist, tightening that mental sound snare on all the other clamorous clatter I have no interest in listening to right now. Probably ever. A smile graces my lips while I relish in the melody of Claude's fluttering giggle. Welcome back, you crazy bitch. Awful trusting of you.
I trust my folk, and I'm 80% certain you won't kill me now that I've saved your life twice.
I open my eyes, smile gone as I look into his intense amber orbs. Depends.
On?
I grip hold of my mead and drag it close to my chest. Your kingdom may be lush and full of smiling, happy folk, but I doubt you've experienced life under your brother's reign. Are you complicit in the way he snatches children from their maws at the tender age of 9? I ask, cocking my head to the side. All the color seeps from his eyes, leaving cold, sooty coals. A whisper of power, and they're immediately snatched from screaming parents and replaced with a bucket of bloodstone. Conscribed, carted off to Drelgod, where they learn how to speak murdering words, practicing on small, fluffy creatures, ripping out that delicate part of a youngling's heart that can never be replaced, turning them into true, tortured monsters.
Rave.
Did you know, I say, gesturing to the hole I sliced into the shell of my own ear, that younglings confirmed as a null are held down and clipped? That this becomes a marker for vulturous folk who target them, coaxing them into undercity battle pits with vacant promises of enough bloodstone to feed their families. Discounted folk otherwise forced to live in the undercity, where the air is too thick, where there is no sun, and every slumber is a gamble on whether or not this is the time that you get woken, immobilized by a hushling squatting on your chest, gently slurping your brain through your nostrils. The wind begins to gust, tilling into a violent swirl that snaps at the curtain, Claude echoing my rage with a roiling song of sharp words and high-pitched squeals. Or worse, I rasp with a clash of thunder, that some skeevy, more powerful fuck might take liberties in the dark where innocence goes to die, all because your dear brother cares only about his plump, powerful army and how many charmed molten maws he has in his military hutch. I lift my mead and drain half the mug in 3 deep gulps, wiping my mouth with the back of my arm. If you are complicit with that, I say, as the wind churns my hair into whipping tendrils of black, much of the light sponging away, then yes, I will find the courage to kill you, despite your smiling city, this strange chemistry between us, and the fact that you've saved my life twice. Our stares hold while the air continues to wrestle with our atmosphere, the silence thicker than water, so much so that I think the establishment may have abruptly emptied.
This strange chemistry, you say?
He asks, the intensity of his gaze sizzling a hole in my soul that makes it hard to breathe. I shrug. He reaches across the table, fingers brushing against mine as he grabs hold of the mug. I let my own hand loosen, and he brings the vessel to his lips, drawing from the opposite side while he studies me over the rim. The ball in his throat rolls. Again. Again. He sets the drink down with a heavy thump.
It has taken many phases to secure the burn and build an armada almost strong enough to rival my kin, who'd already dug their talons deep within the stone and obsidian thrones by the time I found incentive to take the bronze. A war with Kadok or Tyroth will be catastrophic, but it's only a matter of time. My brothers deserve the same mercy my pa received, and it will be served,
he says, voice thick with a daunting tone that casts a chill across my skin.
But it will be costly.
Silence reigns while I chew on his words. You don't mean gold.
I mean innocence,
he growls, and my blood turns to ice. Hire an assassin. Eliminate them without flair rather than a violent overthrow. I volunteer, heartily. I'll even do it for free. Then dance on their fucking corpses. The tick in Khan's jaw pulses, a line forming between his brows.
There is no honor in this, in our culture. A battle is either waged with brute force or between two Oas upon a nullifying battlefield, though my brothers would never agree to that. Not since Raigun and I became Daga Mork.
My eyes widen, brows rise as my heart skips a beat. Another. That explains the weld. The strength.
Most importantly,
he interrupts.
They hold a strong, steady alliance forged in the womb that is unshakable. Dangerous. Deadly.
I hear the silent message threaded between the rumbled statement. To attempt to take on the weight of either kingdom would mean war with both.
A battle would puncture our world and scatter the skies with many more moons,
he says, dropping his voice to a haunting grind, his next words a sizzled swipe at my nerves.
It would pour flames across flesh, drown many, suffocate more. As you pointed out, a great number of those conscripted in the Shades and the Fades armadas are still younglings who should be running around barefoot, laughing and enjoying life. Less fluent than seasoned warriors, they would be the first to die.
Stop. The word belts out of me so fast it scrapes the back of my throat, a strangled breath pouring into my lungs. I break from his gaze, gather the embers of his scorching declarations, and cart them into my frosty expanse, shoving them down a hole in the ice where I don't have to look at them. Attention stabbed at the table, I keep shoving. Shoving. He leans forward, elbows resting against the stone, fingers sliding beneath my chin and tilting my head, forcing me to meet his softening stare.
War is messy, Moonbeam. Even when it's raised for the right reasons, no one truly wins until eons have passed, memories have faded, and all the hurt and loss starts to blur.
I understand, I grind out. You can stop. My eyes scream the word my mouth doesn't shape. Please. The moment stretches while he searches my eyes with an intensity that threatens to dig beneath my skin and skim across my hardened heart. I'm not going to kill you, if that's what you're waiting for. The corner of his mouth kicks up again, and it's like staring into the eye of a storm. So hauntingly beautiful, you almost forget you're in danger. Almost.
I'm honored. Let me know if you change your mind.
Doubtful. I've actually decided his death might be one of the greatest losses this world could suffer.
Not that I'm going to tell him that, of course. This whatever between us will grow into a ravenous beast unless I starve it to death. I'm certain.
Hungry, Rafe?
There's a tender hopefulness in his warm gaze that grates.
Would you like to share a meal with me?
Clearing my throat, I pull away from his touch. No, I don't think I should, I murmur, reaching for his Malmer, feeling the air stiffen as I lift it over my head. Thank you for lending me this. I very much appreciate what you did for me in the crater. I don't go into more detail. Certainly don't speak of the fate herder or the soul's odd foretellings, not wanting to open that messy topic up for inspection as I untangle the loop of leather from my hair, the world a rumbling roar outside. I dangle the precious pendant between us, looking up into hard eyes that still the beat of my heart. He makes no move to take the Malmer. He doesn't even look at it.
It was not lent, Rafe.
The words land slow and hard, lacking the softness of his previous sentence, casting my skin in little bumps. I shove my hand closer to his chest. This means things I can't give you. He watches me with the honed regard of someone inching toward a wild dragon, head tilting.
What do you think I want?
I break from his stare and look through the window, seeing a tumor of gray clouds rolling toward the bay, light scribbling across the surface to the tune of crackling thunder. A warm heart? Offspring to carry on his heritage? At the very least, someone who gets along with his swaggering sister. I swallow, refusing to meet his gaze as I settle the Malmer on the table and stand, shouldering my satchel. I edge from the booth and push free of the fluttering curtains. Around him, sometimes words just feel inadequate. Rafe. Chapter 54. Wind snatches my hair and tosses it about, Claude's song a mix of tittering mania and high-pitched screams, like she's working herself up to slit the atmosphere straight through its bulging, electrical gut. I feel somewhat similar. I charge down the esplanade in a flutter of black fabric, not bothering with my hood, the sun blocked by a boil of gray clouds burgeoning toward me like some rumbling beast, the horizon lost to a hazy smear that appears to be falling from the storm cloud's underbelly. So unlike the earlier bustle, the esplanade is empty and still. So at odds with the rowdy thump of my boots. My thoughts toil with the churning wind, that phantom heaviness sitting on my chest like a mountain, each breath a labored pull. Sighing, I recall the way Khan's eyes lost all their warmth when I offered him back his Malmer. He was hurting. I know he was. I could see it. Perhaps I should have explained. Told him the last Fae who saved my life did it to her detriment. That folk who care about me enough to put themselves in harm's way tend to end up dead. He dodged that blow in the crater battling Hawk. I'm not stupid enough to believe he could dodge another. Life doesn't pat me on the head and praise me for making connections. It thunks arrows through hearts, stabs bellies. It makes damn fucking sure I know loneliness is the only acquaintance I'll ever have, waiting until the roots of connection bore deeper than I'd like to admit before it rips out flesh and bone, sheds blood, stops hearts, hardens mine with another calloused layer of disconnect. But to explain, I would have been forced to fish heavy, painful memories from that ice-covered lake inside myself, and I'm not doing that. Going within is eerie enough as it is. I've dumped all sorts of shit down there, adding to whatever else is already hiding beneath the surface. Who knows what I'd pull up? probably my elusive other, and I'm really not in the mood to wake with more tendons between my teeth, strung up to endure another whipping, completely oblivious to whatever trail of carnage was left in my wake. Nope, not happening. That's what led me here in the first place. If Khan wants me to keep his Melmer, he might as well slip his head through a noose and tighten it himself, then hang his weight upon the loop until he chokes. And though that would have been a balm to my burning rage just a few short slumbers ago, the thought now plows its fist through my chest and rips, rips, rips at all my important bits. I need to get out of here. Casting my stare toward the plateau where I saw the Molten Maw land, I slow, frowning. The assassin tack I ordered would have been handy, but fuck it. Looks like I'm going bare. I've got a dagger. And Claude. Once I reach the fade, I'll work out the rest. I charge down a side alley that appears to weave in the right direction, pausing when a drop of rain weeps right past my ear and splats against my shoulder. My heart stills. Grappling with my internal sound snare, I make sure it's the right tautness, that I've got the right sieve tucked over the opening, the one that allows Claude to slip through, but prevents rain's frosty, snow-falling sobs from penetrating my brain. Keeps her out. I cast my stare upward, and another wailing bead plunges toward me. I flinch as it collides with my cheek in an agonized splat, my hand lifting to sweep its weeping corpse from my skin. What's happening? I study the wetness smeared across my fingers like the anomaly it is, the raindrop's forlorn whimper cleaving a crack through my chest, like she broke apart on impact, achingly aware she'll never be whole again. Not as she was. More heavy droplets wail as they plunge, singing foreign words I don't understand, splashing upon the pavement by my feet, howling from the shock of their savage deconstruction, like they're begging the stone to absorb them, to pull them back together. I edge away from each sad little blotch, wetting my heart in all the wrong ways. This is not good. Eyes wide, I search the sky, chasing the clouds' mournful tears as they sing their fatal song, like each tiny raindrop is innately aware they're caught in a descent that can only end one way, that they will never be more whole than they are right now, plummeting to their doom. My hand flies to my chest to rest upon my thumping heart, the heartbreaking melody growing in strength as the rain falls harder. Faster. Pins prick the backs of my eyes, the same weeping upheaval threatening to mimic within me. Again, I check my mental sound snare. Find no flaws. None. Meaning the song of rainfall must be a different frequency than I'm used to blocking. Lovely. This day can go right ahead and eat a jar of spangle shit. With a cautionary glance at the smudged wall of rain charging toward me, I realize I have no time to fiddle around and try to work out how to block myself from the encroaching clamor, cursing myself for throwing the fucking cuff in the loft. Idiot. I tighten my mental sound snare until it's squeezed entirely shut, gulping air as that sheet of water whips forward and crushes the space between us, drenching me. My snare wobbles like pinched lips, desperate to part, to draw breath and scream. I barely get a chance to brace before it erupts, rain's devastating song spewing through me like iron-tipped lashes to my unguarded eardrums, my unguarded heart. A sob dredges up my throat, an ugly splat of unwelcome sound. I stumble back a step, another, scrambling to tighten the snare and shut myself off. But it's like contracting a muscle that's never been used, not against this blaring force. And rain, she's everywhere, screaming past me, drenching my hair, dribbling down my skin. She's splashing up at me from the puddles forming around my feet, a sloshing melody that grips my frayed heartstrings in clenched fists and rips, 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 like plucking feathers from my heart, like poking fingers through the holes, like packing salt in the now gaping wounds. My face twists, the pain in my chest pulling me into a bunched knot. Stop! Hands clapped over my ears, I stagger toward a stubby awning and spin, forehead pressed against the stone as something inside me splits open like the gates of a gushing dam. And I cry, like I've never cried before. Warm tears leak down my cheeks that only add to the gut-wrenching clamor flaying me with small, precise slits. And it doesn't stop cutting. No matter how hard I crush my palms against my ears, I can't escape the shrieking wails that echo within me, that shatter my composure with the force of a fallen moon, scattering the bits so far and wide I can't see them, can't feel them. Stop! I sob, beg, scream. Stop, 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 A hard warmth presses against me from behind, shielding me from the rain, pulling my hands from my ears and wrapping them around my chest, encasing me in a snug, sturdy embrace. I know it's Khan even before he speaks, my posture folding into his, seeking a silent refuge in his comforting presence and the strong bind of his powerful arms. More ugly, messy sobs wrestle up my throat unchecked, unguarded, raw.
I once knew a female who'd cry when it rained, though she thought I never noticed.
He murmurs against my ear, his dense words battling the torrent of mournful cries like a boom of thunder.
Her name was...
Elowen. His arms tighten, my body a pool melting with the stony slabs of his resilient form.
The cuff was a kindness, Moonbeam. There is little need to weaponize yourself here, but it storms. Often. Violently.
Hindsight. My least favorite way to learn. Claude squeals a slashing melody, like she's pissed at the rain for existing, something I can commiserate with her over. Her air-tossing tantrum dredges a torrent of rain into a horizontal sheet, lashing the side of my face. Rain weeps with newfound ferocity, like she'd just crushed her body into a ball, wrapped her arms around her legs, tipped her scrunching face to the sky, and unleashed. My knees wobble, threatening to buckle from the weight of her deep, mournful yowls. Give me something else to focus on, please. The words have barely left my lips when Khan presses his against my ear, a dense hum rumbling from his chest and cutting through the din as he tucks me impossibly close. A song I'm achingly familiar with. I don't dissect it, not right now, allowing myself to fall into his calming baritone, letting the melody seep through my pores like grains of stone that gather in all my dips and hollows, weighing me down in a comforting crush, sanding the jagged sadness in my chest into something rounded and smooth. My shuddered inhales begin to lose their shake. Still, he hums, threading me together one familiar note at a time until I can draw enough steady breaths to sing along with the tune. Words I've only ever heard murmured through the hollow of my mind. Distant echoes I've never been able to grasp the dusky origin of. Words that have given me solace in times I've felt alone or uncertain. Brought me peace when my soul screamed the opposite. Words I think might have belonged to somebody special. Once. In another life. Another time. The storm stops just as abruptly as it began, Khan planting the final note against the arch of my neck like a phantom kiss, the tender press of his lips infusing me with a burst of knee-buckling familiarity. Like I've been here before, caught in his grasp, crushed close to his chest. Kissed? Like I've been lulled by his comforting presence in a dream I can barely remember the shape of. Only the sturdy bind of his arms keeps me from crumbling into a heap on the puddled ground, my lungs now powering for a different reason. "You know my song," I whisper. Silence ensues, so thick and heavy my heart rate spikes. "How, Khan?" I regret the question the moment it falls from my lips, a bulb of dread swelling in the back of my throat, threatening to choke me. What if he says something too big and painful for me to discard? What if his words resonate with another unsettling strike of familiarity, drains more of my icy lake, exposes more stones? What then?
"There's something I need to show you,"
he murmurs against my neck, then grabs my hand, plants a warm kiss upon my blanched knuckles, and tugs. For some strange, uncertain reason, I don't argue, don't dig my heels into the ground. I follow. Rave. Chapter 55. Deep within the heart of the Imperial stronghold, Khan unlocks a chain threaded between two mammoth black wooden doors, carved to look like a pair of warring saber scythes going head to head, the handles twin tusks curling from their pronged faces. I cut a glance down the empty, dim-lit tunnel behind me as I wait for him to unwind the chain, tugging the left door open. With a sweep of his hand, he gestures for me to step inside. The dark room. Ahead of him. I don't think so. "You first." He sighs, charging into the gloom with a barrage of heavy footsteps. I follow, sketching out the shape of the space, slivers of sun coming through from what I suppose are curtains over on the far side. Khan moves toward them. "Vale de Nalui," I whisper, whipping Claude into a giggling churn. She twirls across the room, tangles with the curtains, and rips them wide, dousing the room full of light. Khan stops before the glass doors, hand outstretched. He clears his throat.
"Thanks."
"Pleasure," I say, taking in what I suppose is his personal suite based on the dominance of his warm scent. I'm certain he dabs something on his skin each aurora rise that makes him smell so inconveniently Moorish. This sitting room is packed with curved bookshelves, plush leather chaises, and a black rug stretched across the floor. Beside a deep, upholstered chair that's worn to the padding in places sits a large string instrument resting on a stand, the frayed strings in desperate need of replacing. On the other side of the same chair is a small round table with a bottle of spirits, an empty glass, and a corked jar that holds something misty. Swirling. He snatches it, tucking it inside a drawer within the table. I arch a brow. "Don't want me to see your jar of mist?"
"Not particularly,"
he murmurs, hanging his Melmer on the instrument. I look away, seeing various weapons haphazardly dumped on shelves and a pair of boots kicked off by the door. My stare glides to a map of the world that stretches across a large curve of wall, the yellowed parchment littered with tiny black crosses, most of which are south of Gore. Thousands of them. "Keep your secrets," I say, gaze bouncing from cross. To the map's left, a blade's been stabbed into the stone, and from the constellation of indents surrounding it, I garner it's not the first time it's wound up there.
"Believe me,"
Khan mutters, gathering some bits of clothing he'd left lumped on the cedar.
"I'm under no false assumption that you're even the slightest bit interested in my secrets."
"Realistic expectations are healthy." He grunts, carrying the clothes through a wide doorway to the right, disappearing into the darkness within while I do another visual sweep of the space, noticing a fine sheen of dust on his shelves. Actually, pretty much upon everything except his instrument, the cedars, that bottle of spirits, and the dagger stabbed in the wall. Huh. Guessing you don't entertain much? Or even let somebody in to clean?
The bolted door puts most folk off,
he says from somewhere within the adjacent room.
Suits me just fine.
Right. Likes his privacy. Got it. I look to the lofty domed ceiling adorned with overlapping dragon scales I suspect are Rhygon's based on their burnt blood tone. A huge chandelier hangs from the peak, pieced together with more saber-scythe tusks than I've ever seen in one place, all of varying shapes and sizes. Wouldn't want to be standing here if the mountain shook, I murmur, gaze shifting to my right as Khan emerges from the shadowed doorway with two towels, tossing one at me. Thanks, I say, using it to sponge some of the water clinging to every inch of me like the remnants of a slumber terror, drying off my garments while he does the same. I drape my towel across the back of a cedar, along with my satchel.
This way,
he rumbles, tossing his towel next to mine, then moves toward the twin doors ahead. They look out onto what appears to be an overgrown private garden doused in so much shade, I'm surprised anything grows out there at all. He unlocks the doors and steps through, and I follow into the humid mist, down an unkept path that often requires me to duck. Insects creaking, water beating off the faces of round, velvety leaves the color of clay. A ruffle of wind offers me a glimpse through the dense foliage to the sandy view beyond, and I realize this garden looks south, toward the fade, away from the sun.
It's just down here,
Khan says, moving toward a fall of coppery vines that clothe segments of this steep, uneven wall surrounding this garden. He parts the natural drape, cleaving an opening through to a hidden tunnel beyond, then ducks and shoves in ahead of me. I frown. I'm not following you down there. He pauses, looking at me over his shoulder.
Why not?
Because that's how folk die, Khan. I know, because that's how I... His brows bumps up. I pause, reconsider divulging my trade secrets with a king I only decided to semi-trust 2 seconds ago, then figure it's best he knows I'm a bloodstain on his pretty paradise. Assassinate. This right here, I gesture to the tunnel he's leading me down, is a prime location for you to slit my throat, then carve some letters on my chest. Wonder what he'd give me. Probably returns precious gifts. He turns to fully face me, eyes beseeching as he says,
Listen, Rave.
I am, obviously.
No.
He growls, placing his hand on the smooth, rounded wall.
Listen.
I open my mouth, close it when his meaning sinks in. But he's so...
What?
Stable. Sturdy. The absolute opposite of me. Crossing my arms, I shake my head and sigh, loosening my internal sound snare almost wide enough to let him in. Balder. I hold Khan's stifling gaze a moment, then loosen the snare that little bit more, slapping a wide-holed sieve atop the opening and bracing myself for Balder's grinding vibrato that doesn't come. Because he's not singing. Not at all. He's humming. A deep, droning roll. Almost like a baritone coo. My brow buckles, my own hand coming out to flatten on the burnished stone. It's...
This is a place of nurture, Rave, of love and worship. If I wanted to harm you, I certainly wouldn't do it within this cavern,
he says, holding my stare with chest-crushing intensity. Can't you just tell me what's down there? His eyes soften.
I can't. This is something you need to see for yourself.
Cr-
creators. Fine, I snip. But just so you know, I coaxed your guard into swapping an empty crockery dish for his dagger that's currently strapped to my upper thigh, and I'm not afraid to use it.
He blinks, shaking his head as I step into the tunnel, letting the fall of foliage sweep shut behind me, engulfing us in shadow. The tight stairwell is littered with small glowing bugs that remind me of moonplume moons, offering a meager amount of light for our journey down the endless coil of stairs I wish I'd counted from the beginning. I'm certain we're over 1,000 steps down by now, my skin no longer warm but delightfully cold, my exhales like puffs of smoke. Khan fills the stairwell so entirely the top of his head nearly brushes the light-smattered ceiling, his shoulders almost too big for him to be moving down faced forward. Every now and again, I try to peep past him and see if there's an end in sight, but it's useless. He's a giant stairwell plug. I collect the damp length of my hair to squeeze the gathered moisture from the ends, frowning when I realize the water has begun to stiffen, to frost. Much farther? I ask, brushing the fractals off my hands, wondering if he's walking me all the way through to the other side of the world, if we're going to emerge near Netherin, the moonplume nesting grounds.
Not far.
Khan looks at me over his shoulder, his eyes glinting in the dark as he assesses me.
Are you okay with the cold? You can have my tunic if you...
I'm fine. Something flashes in his eyes, like perhaps he assumes the thought of wearing his tunic makes me uncomfortable. It doesn't. At least, not in the way he probably thinks. I don't tell him the deeper we've drilled, the less tentative I've been about this decision to follow him down a twirling tunnel into a dark abyss. I certainly don't tell him the growing cold feels a lot like... home. The reason I keep trying to peep past him isn't because I'm worried he might be taking me down here to murder me. Not anymore. No. Some innate part of me is drawn to whatever's at the bottom of this never-ending stairwell. The frosty nether nips at my skin, turning the tip of my nose so blissfully numb, the chilled air beginning to lap at me like an undulation of icy waves that tug in their withdrawal, urging me deeper, deeper. Each step folds me further into that tiding tug, until the darkness gives way to a silvery light that kisses the walls and steps, that turns Khan into a gloomy silhouette against the radiant luminosity trying to squeeze past him from whatever's on the other side.
We're here,
he murmurs, his voice a shockwave through the hungry silence that lifts the hairs on the back of my neck. He steps to the side, dousing me in light. So much light. My heart stops, an icy cleft of awe fracturing my chest as I take in the circular cavern, the swooping walls embossed in magnificent, detailed carvings of moon plumes. The same magnificent creature in hundreds of different stances, long neck, big, wistful eyes, spindly tendrils that trail from its jowls and whisk with its crafted movement. Elegant tri-membrane wings fit for speed and unmatched agility, wispy tail with silken threads that sweep and coil and flick with a gush of personality. The carvings meld together much the same way as the dragons on Khan's Malmer, though the extravagant mural pales in comparison to the massive silver moon the cavern cradles like an egg, the ground dipped in the middle like cupped palms, no doubt keeping it from rolling around. A choked sound slips up my throat, and for a moment I don't move, don't breathe, don't blink. Something within me settles, nuzzling into a comforting curl that makes the backs of my eyes sting for the second time this day, so overwhelmed by the moon's rounded beauty that I feel like the world is tipping. My shuddered exhale is so thick and milky it's hard to see through, a loud smudge upon the gobbling silence. I stagger forward, hand outstretched, the tips of my fingers aching with the need to touch, to trace the divots and mounds of the fallen moon plume forever tucked in a sleeping curl, head half nudged beneath a fan of a frayed membrane. The dragon's silky tail is woven up beneath its winged embrace, spilling out in tufts about its neck and head like a once soft pillow. Drawing close to the fallen beast, I feel smaller than I ever have, a hatchling in comparison to its vast size. Baldur continues to hum, the heavy baritone an audible cradle of droning comfort so complex it's impossible to grasp. Like looking up at the stars and trying to work out what's in the dark gaps between those distant prickles of light. He's a nest, I realize. Can almost picture him crouched, hands cupped before his chest, curled under this beautiful moon while he looks down upon it. Treasures it. Nurtures it. My throat thickens so much it's painful to swallow. I reach forward, brushing my hand across the moon plume's once leathery hide, now fossilized. So hard and cold, it's like caressing a frosted mound of ice. "Your moon," I rasp, a small smile picking up the corner of my mouth as a tear slips down my cheek that I'm swift to bat away.
"Her name was Slatra,"
Khan says, a rawness to his voice that I've never heard before.
"I'm yet to find her final shards. You can't see on this side, but there's a small crevice around the back of her I still need to fill."
A chill climbs my spine, and I trace a hairline fissure with the tip of my finger, looking up to see so many more webbed across the metallic beast, proving she smashed into thousands of shards upon impact. Shards that have been painstakingly pieced together in this rounded tomb. "You did this?" I ask, my voice wobbly.
"I did, yes."
I shake my head, realization gushing down my throat like a drowning shove of water. My rage, my rabid thirst for revenge was blinding. I thought Khan was a tyrant, a heartless monster. But he has such a big, warm heart, I'm surprised it fits in his chest. Why?
"Because it hurts knowing she's not whole,"
he rasps, casting another sweep of sting across the backs of my eyes. I step around the dragon, pausing at the spot where Slatra's head is nuzzled deep into the tuft of her tail. My heart stills, breath catches. A bludgeoning bang inside my chest almost makes me lose my balance. Ignoring the sounds of splitting ice ratcheting through me, I ease up onto my tiptoes, peering over the cleft of her wing to the small hollow it's shielding. Not sharp and jagged like bits are still missing, but a smoothed ingress close to the tip of the beast's wide nose, as though Slatra gave her final breath, cradling something bundled within the silken tendrils of her once soft tail, shielded by her cupped claw. My brow furrows, stare pouring into that snug hollow, almost feeling its clefts and bulges nudged against my body, cradling me, almost feeling the cold expanse between her slit nostrils pressed against my brow, the solidified tuft of her tail cushioning my chest. I stumble back a step, another, sucking breath into lungs that seem to have forgotten how to work. "No."
"You're familiar with it,"
Khan says, his baritone wrestling the silence like a rock slide. Battering me. My thoughts tunnel to a memory I discarded long ago. Its corpse laid out on the shore of my internal lake, stripped of all the frilly emotion I plucked from it, leaving only the bony skeleton of something that might have hurt one time, felt heavy in some way, I allow myself to assess the remains from an angle of relative disconnect. A strange trundling sound had roused me from my eternal sleep. I'd blinked my eyes open for the first time, taking in the world I'd been born into through the iron bars of what I now know is called a cage. My brutal waking was fraught with confusion while I tried to work out how I fit inside my body, how it worked and moved, why everything was blurry, warm. Yet I trembled, violently. I thought it was the heat, but now I know that's not the case. My soul was shuddering from the inside out. I'd reached forward, finding something heavy and cold clamped around my wrist, an item I now know to be a shackle. I'd clung to the bars in the effort to steady myself in this strange existence where I had hands that moved, lungs that breathed, and eyes that could see, my stare narrowing on the source of the sound that had drawn me into existence. A cart being wheeled down the length of a dusty burrow past my place of waking. In its deep hollow sat jagged shards of silver brightness that gave off a lapping chill I wanted to splash upon my face. The shards were so beautiful against the dim of my surroundings that I was immediately certain my place of waking was not good, but bad. Because no matter how hard I grunted and screamed, trying to beg the creature that was pushing the cart to please bring it closer so I could have a proper look at the pretty, pretty shards I desperately wanted to touch, he did not so much as look at me. The shards disappeared, and I realized mere moments into my existence what it meant to be trapped.
Answer me, Rave.
Again, I feel trapped, forced to look at something I'm certain has the potential to shred me from the inside out if I look any deeper, any harder. Because those shards I saw when I first opened my eyes to the world, I now understand they were scavenged at the same time as me. That's why the cart was lugging them past my cell. They'd just been snatched from the snow, dragged inside a mountain of stone and ice.